Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me.
Yes, sir.
Ring bang 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 bang. Revolution, dang 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 dang. Check me. Some corporate people don't come out and them a make big speech, but poor people the food not reach. I'm enough to wonder how them really sleep. Them living in the pool while the poor are feeling the heat. Red country, why it's red country, why. The ghetto part of town, you ain't nothing but a victim. We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to say let alone. If you hit the big man a gunshot, then broke your bone with stone. Boy, so a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution coming in a Babylon, yeah. A revolution. Government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation? If there's no light at the end of the tunnel, well, young yourself, I go red like hell. For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't swell. For no more big speech, time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation. People say it's because of separation. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, wriggling in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution. Dang, da, da, dang, dang, da, da, dang. All you false leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but poor mongers, idol worshippers, them assassins. Yo, you better come down off of your pumps and quite stop taking poor people for a joyride. Cause all you teach is to divide and rule, and I use the people then with your political tool, just fool. Sure, cause a revolution, yeah. If we're going to hear the revolution, ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding. A revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, ding da dang da dang da dang. Whoa, whoa. No matter how them a come out and a kill off them teeth, yet the poor man the food not reach. Tell them all to practice what they preach, cause I don't want to see them all a pagan preach. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution. Ring dang da da dang da da. A revolution.
Look at you now.
Hey, do you have anything on you? Have anything on you? Hey, do you have anything on you? Hey, do you have anything on you?
Let's make some noise!
All of America, all of America, on Friday evening, go to any big city, and you'll see blacks lined up to get into Chinatown to go to China, eat some Chinese food. Have you ever seen Chinese lined up trying to get into a black town? Somebody is not playing with a full deck. You're not playing the game to win, you're just playing. And you got to stop spending your money. So then I see, I go to various cities, and blacks got the nasty habit, when company comes, putting them in their car on a Sunday and taking them out to the white community and say, let me go out and show you some nice white homes. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Let's go out to look at the white malls. And then they come back home and say, how in the world can white folk afford all those fine homes and big houses? It's easy. It's your money. You see what I'm saying? And y'all think I'm teasing. See, they're living off of two incomes. They live off 100% of their income and 95% of yours. And you're trying to live off of 2%. It is humanly impossible for a race of people to live off of 2% of their income. And in America, you equate human worth based on what you own. And if black folk don't own 2%, that's why white racists say, black folk ain't worth 2 cents. Because we don't own anything, and human worth is equated in this country based on what you own and control. And we violate all the premises of economics. We have yet to learn how to practice group economics. And the last thing about integration is that integration got a quota system, and you need to know this. It's got a quota system. You hear white somebody against quotas, they're wrong. It's got a quota system. Anytime you get more than 5 to 8% of blacks involved in anything, whites are going to put up chains. They're going to stop you. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks move into their community, they're going to put their house up for sale. If more than 5% of blacks, 8% of blacks go into their schools, they're going to pull their kids out of school. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their businesses, they're going to move the business out of town, cross town, out of the country. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their association, they'll resign. They got a quota system. And people say, well, blacks are against affirmative action. No, they're not against affirmative action. They're against affirmative action for you. You see, they're against a set aside. Racism is nothing but preferential treatment for whites. They say they're against preferential treatment. You hear them say they're against set aside. Jim Crow is nothing but a 100-year set aside program for whites. So they set aside the best restaurants, the best food, the best schools for whites. They say they're against quotas. You got a quota system, I told you, in the immigration laws. Today, you still are a planned minority. You can't win. So now let me get to some solutions for you very quickly. I have a few more minutes I got left. What we're going to do across this country now is we're going to call Powernomics. That's a new book coming out called Powernomics, Unleashing Black American Potential. It's a follow-up to the book Black Labor, White Wealth. It'll show you in very specific terms what you got to do to be competitive. The things we got to focus on is in broad categories with specific principles. The first is a community. You cannot do anything unless you have a community. Your community is your social cohesiveness. The only power, the potential that black people have in America is your social, racial cohesiveness. If you don't have that, you have no power. Forget about everything else. That's a fact of life. You got to have a community because the community will give you your businesses. It'll give you your sales opportunities and your markets. Now, how do you develop communities? The first thing you must do is stay out of all cross-purpose issues. Cross-purpose means horizontal issues. Don't get involved in any horizontal issues. Let me explain it to you. I see the puzzlements in your eyes. First, racism is vertical. Remember this. Racism is straight up and down. Racism means I don't care whether you are the lowest income black or the highest, the best educated or the least educated. It doesn't make any difference. You're all in the same tube. Okay? That's what Malcolm X asked. What is a black man with a PhD? Remember that saying? He answered, well, he's still a Negro. Okay? It means it doesn't make any difference. You're all in it together. That's straight up and down. Horizontal issues are any issue that pertains to everybody. Stay out of it. You're the weakest and poorest, most vulnerable people. Don't get involved in it. Because the only people that can benefit are those people who are directly behind where the horizontal crosses the vertical. Okay? The only people who benefit are where those two points cross. That's too small. You don't have that kind of energy and resources to waste. Now, what's a horizontal issue? Sexism is a horizontal issue. When you get into these various religious issues, that's a horizontal issue. Poverty is a horizontal issue. I keep telling some of my civil rights leaders, stay away from poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is a fix. It's a given. You're always going to have poor people. And people say, well, you're going to have poor Greeks, poor Indians, poor Lithuanians, poor Hungarians. Quit trying to eradicate poverty and try to get as many black folk as you out and leave poverty alone. But they try to eradicate something that can't be eradicated. Culturalism. That's a horizontal issue. That pertains to everybody. Let me give you about sexism, for instance. I tell black women who always want to get into sex issues, they think that somehow that the issue is sex rather than racism. See, my great-grandmother was not enslaved because she's a woman. She was enslaved because she was black. Okay? And if you're going to get into sexism, I want black women to understand this, to keep your priorities in order. If I say abracadabra right now and sexism disappeared, you still can't go any place because you're black. And to keep it in order, remember what your mother felt. The minute she knew she was pregnant, she knew at that moment she was going to have what? A black child long before she knew the sex. So you keep your priorities straight and say, since my color came before my sex, I'm going to keep it in that order. You always say black first. So stay out of those cross-prepositions. I'll explain out the next time I come back out here on a Powernomics workshop or something. But that's very important. I can show you all the problems you got with that. And see, but once you stay out of those horizontal issues, like I tell some of my Muslim friends, I said, don't be worried about pushing Islamic faith. Push your skin color first and stay aligned with your peoples. And I tell them, the people in the Baptist church, quit worrying about about being a Baptist and worry about being black. And again, I have to give credit to your minister. It seems like he's one of the few in the country who understands that. That you put who you are and as a people before you start talking about what denomination you belong to. And especially since most of the denominations on the earth all work together to enslave black folk. All of them pimp and hustle black folk. The Catholics, the Protestants, the Baptists, the Jews, and everybody else got black folk. But what we're going to do then is start, once we get past building these communities, then we're going to start getting into what we call practicing building alternative economics.
Greetings. Welcome to the Chef Rob Show. Hey, Brother Pianchi, I see your hand up.
How you doing, Chef Rob? Be glad you get rid of them ribs, man. Put some salad up there.
What's up?
Every time I look at them ribs, my knees go to shaking.
Hey, come on, man.
Like a
come
gun
on,
is
man.
At my back.
Okay, you know what, man? I did some demos here recently, and I like how these pictures came out. I'm gonna put some of them up there, man. Put some new stuff up there. And
you know what? A brother opened up a barbecue shop. I think he stayed in business maybe a month, maybe three at the most. Black folks ain't even eating barbecue no more, which I'm happy for.
Why you say that?
Cause stuff ain't no good. The pork, man. You know that. Damn pork. We got enough stuff in our community that's messed up. Let's long eating that stuff.
Hey man,
and see, here's a point. It ain't like it used to be, neither.
Okay. Explain.
And none of that stuff like it used to. I was sitting in my friend's son's barbershop talking, and some young girls came in. I guess they was about 15 or so, black girls. Because that's all that's in our neighborhood. I don't have any white folks in my neighborhood. It's hard to find one. But I told them, I said, you know, y'all ain't never had no good chicken. What this stuff y'all eating calling chicken ain't chicken. And, you know, I mean, that's true because they haven't. And there was some other people in there that told them, yeah, that's true. You haven't. So, no, that stuff, we have to change our diet. We have to work to, you know, try to live as long as we can because we got a lot of things to do. And those who have these skills, they need to live long because they have to pass these skills along. The more people, the better.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I mean, like, but I, let me say this though. Okay, I understand what you say about pork. It's a difference between a domesticated pig and a wild pig. Okay. You know, domesticated pig, they feeding you feeding them the stuff from the table, the garbage from the table that humans won't eat. But domesticated
main difference them is a wild pig will chase your ass.
But as far as it being a wild pig is a lot healthier than that domesticated pig, because he exercising and he run around there eating good. They eat a lot of plants and vegetables. Every now and then they eat meat.
Yeah,
but a domesticated pig is eating the garbage that the humans won't eat, and so they fattening it up, and so that's why you get the bad pigs. This is one reason I don't like when I go ahead and hear people go ahead and say, based on their religious beliefs, that a pig is bad, but they won't give you no reasons why, tell you why a pig is bad. It's a difference. A domesticated pig, it can be horrible for you, but you go out there and catch one of them wild hogs, you got some better meat.
You should have told them, well, prove it. Like I got in this debate with this black man the other day over some religious stuff, telling him that God, the Bible, was made for one person. Next thing he said, well, prove it. Then the next thing he said was, prove it, prove it. Well, I really don't find one right here. But no, you know, it's you try that and see. I think I like those colors. There's a couple of shows that have a picture of fruit you know, vegetables. And, man, that's, you know, that makes the palate start moving around on you.
You know, it gets you to thinking. You're thinking a good meal, man.
Yeah.
The meal does wonders, especially, you know, prior to the meal, you can go ahead and see it, eye appeal. That's doing something to your psyche. You go ahead and you eat it. That's going ahead and doing something to your body, then, you know, making you feel good, filling you up right there. And then later on, you know, it's going ahead and maintaining your body's strength and everything else. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. I can go ahead and throw I did some good deals, man, so I'll throw some stuff on there, man. What you think about what Claude Anderson was saying, man?
Well, Claude Anderson is telling the truth. I first met Claude Anderson at an MBUF convention in Houston, Texas, back in 1998, I think it was, the year that John Henry Clark died. And I was very impressed with what he had to say. And, you know, when you first hear him, these things kind of fly over your head. But you begin to understand what it is. I give you an example. You know, he talk about we talk about black folks in this election is complaining, along with Obama, about how jobs have left the country, and how Mitt Romney is pushing jobs over to China, right?
Right.
Well, black folks didn't complain when white folks took them jobs out of their cities and left them. You understand what I'm saying? If Negroes were going to be hollering about jobs leaving, they should have hollered about when whites left the cities and left them in them. You know, when whites left the cities and took their stores. No, they left the store. They left the building. And they sat vacant for years.
Right.
So they go.
You know what? Wait. Because they own the building, too, a lot of them.
Well, they left the building. I'm telling you the truth. They left the buildings. And he's, you know, everybody.
Wait. This is what I'm saying. They just packed up their stores and stuff like that. But whites still owned the building. A lot of times that store owned that building. So later on, they came back and they let anybody go ahead and come in, open up your silly little liquor stores or the other BS. That's what they're doing. And they still own the building and the land.
Well, whites own the liquor stores when they was here. You know, I remember them very well. The names of them, I remember the first liquor store in this area. Happy Hollow was its name. But blacks and you know what? NAACP at one time had these signs all over the place, and it had one word on it, missing. And that's what they was talking about. Missing is this. Missing is that. Missing. It wasn't no dollar stores then.
But NAACP is missing, so you should put that sign. That sign should come back. Talking about them.
Well, I'm happy that they missing in many cases, but to tell you the truth, I hear black folks going along and complaining. Well, Romney shipped all our jobs overseas. He shipped factories overseas. Well, hell, whites. Why come you don't complain against white folks when they took jobs out of the city? When they took businesses out of the city? Mm-hmm. When they took clothing stores out of the city. You didn't complain to them, so why are you complaining now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. I mean, the rumblings are real, real small. all, man. It was some people complain, but I don't think it was nothing really big. I mean, I think that's basically because we don't have that big media apparatus in place.
Yeah, but you know what Claude Anderson is talking about is absolute true. Black folks do not control that economy that's in their community. That they, for instance, we getting reparations already.
We are?
Yes.
Explain that first. Before
matter of fact, they done things to help you, but we didn't take advantage of it. They put food stamps into the hands of about 10 million black people, 9 million something, some odd 100,000, right? Okay, now they're gonna take them food stamps and they're going to buy food with them. Well, if you were strategically placing yourself to be in that loop, we should have had stores, whereas we could have received those food stamps, cashed them in, and it could have been our operating capital, our cash flow, in order to run our businesses, right?
Oh.
You follow what I'm saying? Now.
Oh. Reparations, but reparations at a trickle.
You got reparations. That's about $9, $10 billion a year. That ain't no trickle. I mean, you can do a lot with that. Now, take this, for instance. In your public schools, with the free and where the government is paying for the lunch, or the children is not paying full price for the lunch. Well, why come we're not in the kitchen with our women like we used to be in Iraq, where black women was in the kitchen in these cafeterias in these schools, cooking, preparing the food. You had food was being bought locally, okay, right. And it was being grown locally.
Okay? Well.
In the food, carrying it up the steps.
But let me get that real quick. You know the corporations set in and they came. They got all these big farms and all this other stuff, so they can go ahead. They supposedly come in with a cheaper price, but right now the price is above the market average because they've gotten the politicians in their pockets.
They always
say that. That's something else. That's a little bit more to that, Brother Pianki.
Well, they always say that, but Rob, in the essence, I'm talking about before what we have now with Aramac and Sodexo. And the bad thing about it, at least the money did stay in the hand, because when you paid that lady, them cooks on whenever, they spent that money in the community because they couldn't go no place else. So
yeah,
now
most of them also lived in the community, yeah, because I remember going up and going here and seeing some of the women that was in the cafeteria and didn't live too far from
it. And here's another point, too. The food was good, man. We didn't... If you go back and look at Soul Train videos, you don't see no obese people on those videos. Let their guess. So if you don't control that economy, brother, you're in bad shape. In bad shape. You have to control that. That's by which, I mean, it's the neighbor. And here's another point. I hear black folks always complain that, well, blacks won't stick together. I know you hear that too.
Well, I don't agree with that either.
Well, here's another point. During this campaign, this election campaign, they complained about Romney being a Mormon, and guess what? Man, the Mormons didn't want us to join their church. Well, hell,
now you realize that?
The Mormons were doing you a favor. It was telling you to go start your own church. Support
right.
Your own church. Why are you over here messing with us? Now you're complaining that black folks don't stick together. Well, hell, that's their fault. They wanted to go be a part of everybody else's stuff.
Hey, Brother Pianki, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I thought you said something real quick.
Tracy, just stay out there and write and put up the shake the head grinning icons. Call in, Tracy, and add some flavor to this. Girl.
Maybe she will. Yeah, let me play something real quick, bro. Let me, this other little, this was quick. Man, what is with these people, man?
That's why I wrote my book. That's why you got a plan now. Two is that whites and other groups are boycotting your neighborhoods. They're boycotting you. And three, we're boycotting our own neighborhoods and our own stores. That's why we don't have anything. Now, as long as you live, you will never see a white person get up on a Saturday morning, drive down to a black neighborhood, and get out of his car and go into a black store to buy something made by a black person. If you do, take a picture of it.
Ain't that something, Brother Bianchi?
That's right. I told that you, I was at a meeting one time, there was some whites in the meeting, blacks in there talking that stuff, and I got up and told the white, I said, you know, whites, I'm going to tell you something. If you crazy enough to teach black children what they need to know to compete with your daughters and sons and your nieces and nephews, you damn fool. Black folks looked at me like I was, like I had grown 10 feet tall, man.
Oh, they didn't look at you like you was a traitor?
Hell yeah, they looked at me like I was a traitor. But why would they teach your children how to compete against theirs?
Right.
I sure wouldn't.
Right.
You think Zito was going to tell the Detroit Tigers what he was going to throw for the
first
game? Hell no.
Hell no.
This is about competition, man. This is about money. This ain't about no love. This ain't about no morals. This ain't about no right and wrong. It's about a law, and out of the laws, they make rules. That's all we need to know. What is the rules?
What are the rules?
And I go do it myself.
Well, there's got to be some rules.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What is the rules? We know what the rules are in Monopoly. We know what the rules are in checkers and chess. That's all we need to know is the rules. Then we need to. Then if we can get some other leverages, that's perfectly fine. Negotiated leverages for tit for tat. But Asians come here, all they need to know is what the rules are. Arabs come here, all they want to know is the rules.
We need a new set of rules.
No, we don't need no new set of rules. Before I came to the show, I had to go get a charger for my phone. Of course, I had to go to the gas station, and the Arabs control that, and I got to talking. I pulled out an Egyptian. The guy told me $43 for what I bought. I pulled out a $50 Egyptian pound and gave it to him. He looked at it and said, I can't use this. He said, this is Egyptian money. I said, yeah, I know. He said, you got a lot of money in your different countries' money in your wallet. He said, what did you do, collecting? I said, no, I've been there. So, what we done, we started talking about politics. He's from Jordan. We started talking about Syria and, you know, the other countries that was involved in the Arab Spring. And I got to tell him the history. He said, well, you know, you're much brighter than most of the blacks that come in here. They don't seem to know anything about, you know, this stuff. And that's true. I mean, he wasn't saying it in a derogatory way, but he was telling the truth. We don't know what we need to know, or should I say, we don't know what we entirely need to know, not only in politics, but also in business, of course, and also the business alone will reflect into the overall performance of your social life.
About business, you know, you should pretty much apply what you've been taught to go ahead and doing business, right?
Well, yes, it's very handy.
Okay, so but if you learn, you know, from a lot of us from dealing with things on the street, not so much going ahead being a drug dealer, but going ahead and being a street hustler, going ahead and doing other things on the product. Couldn't that skill go ahead and help you if you go ahead and start getting to creating a product and try to deal with it at the corporate level?
Yeah, you already got many examples of that, of individuals. You can name them better than I can.
So my thing is pretty much is, you know, how do we bring out that skill, what we already know when we're bartering amongst ourselves? How do we bring that out to go ahead and do it with something else? I think it'll be easier going ahead, like with the with Dr. Claude Anderson. I think he needs a lot of sales reps.
The skills are there, and even the money is there. I mean, I don't encourage nobody to go out and sell drugs to raise money in order to start a business. Well, hell, how many people you know have had an accident, been involved in an accident, and they use the proceeds from them insurance claims to start businesses? How many people you know who was on the bus and the bus had an accident, and they know damn well their back ain't hurting, but guess what? They actually hurt so they can get money, right?
Right.
And some of them take that money and start a business. Well, it wasn't the most savory way to acquire money. That way,
yeah.
Nor is drugs the most savory way to acquire money that way,
right.
But it can be used as capital to start a business.
Yeah, you know what? You know, and that's a rough and honest way to actually put it. But
well, we don't go ask the CIA why come they act in an immoral way to put crack cocaine in the money in order to raise cash so that they could fund. Who was it, the Sandinistas?
Sandinistas.
Yeah.
Nicaraguans. See, I remember that. Yeah. But, you know, you don't hear too much about them going ahead and saying it's not true. What you hear from them is, like, very low, it's not true. And the media really don't deal with it. I think we need a stronger media apparatus. We don't really have a strong media apparatus in place, and here's another reason why I bring that up is because I was looking at the news recently, and they were talking about some billboards going up, negative billboards going up in black communities, and it was the people who were behind it was Clear Channel. So Clear Channel owns the majority. I think they own most of the black new radio stations, and they don't have you don't have no black news, no TV news, so black radio stations. Clear Channel owns about all of them. So, I just think it's one of those times that black people need to take advantage of some kind of boycott. Stop paying attention to these black radio stations because them putting up them billboards about you can go to jail if you vote and all this other stuff. You vote, go to jail for fraud if you vote fraudulently, all of that stuff. But they're putting up this information in black neighborhoods. This is just another straw that for me is breaking the camel's back because Clear Channel owns the black news stations, the black radio stations, and we don't have no black news stations. But the black radio stations is constantly playing garbage. And people are not associating the two. But the thing that was even more shocking for me is not so much the Clear Channel was going ahead and deadening our minds by going ahead and playing that that garbage on terrestrial media, make you don't even want to listen no more. Is that Bain Capital owns Clear Channel?
Well, they used to. I don't think they still do, but they did at one point in time. You're absolutely right. Clear Channel have signed a $400 million contract with Rush Limbaugh too.
Regardless if they did at one time or not, it's still the ideology is there. It came from them individuals.
I agree.
And to go
with
ahead
you.
And that's why they change the black formats.
I agree.
Okay,
with you.
There's no you're not dealing with no serious black issues. They got a playlist, they play the same old songs, they don't deal with what's going on out here. All they want to keep you doing is laughing and joking and drinking and high all the time.
But the thing that I always bring out when not so long ago when Rush Limbaugh used the word slut to describe a lady, and black folks was getting calling him all this, that, and the other. And I said, well, hell, you paying his salary, your gospel stations, your churches buy space to preach, what they preach on the radio.
Right.
You are buying products from the commercials on the hip-hop music stations,
exactly.
R&B music stations, the rock and roll music stations.
Yep.
So you're participating in it, your own demise.
Exactly.
But here's the point. Every 15 minutes or every 12 minutes, a station goes for what? A commercial break. I mean, black businesses are on there.
Yep.
Rush Limbaugh recanted what he said, and why? Because he lost by 30 advertising spots. Was none of them black businesses advertising? So blacks hollering and complaining to Rush Limbaugh for what he said, along with, whoever else, don't mean jack. until you do something that hurt them. Saying these, call them mean and call them nasty, saying that he's all this and all that, don't hurt them at all until you hurt their pocketbook.
You got to go ahead and take your money and put it back in your pocket. Go ahead and find a better deal. You know, if they're treating you like shit, you got to go ahead and go to the next spot. I don't understand why. Take the Korean hair shop. Now I'm gonna stay on that. The thing that bugs me so much is like where my mom lives. It's like three houses. Then there's an alley. Then there's like a clinic. Then it's a Korean owned hair store. And then there's the corner. The Korean owned hair store is on the corner. So a lot of times, as I drive to my mom's house, I can see people out front yelling and screaming at the Koreans inside. And I'm trying to go ahead and see black people just standing there yelling. I mean, why would you go ahead and yell and scream at them? Why are you even going there? It's your money. Take your money and go somewhere else. Why are you going in there anyway paying for that frustration? That don't make no sense to me.
Well, that was something they believe they got out of civil rights. That's something that they believe they got out of King marching. That's something that they believe they got out of black president. That whites or anybody else has got to take your money.
I wish I got some more of that clip, man, from most of that Parnomics, man, because there was some stuff he said to address those things. And it's really, 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 really shocking.
You know, it is really stupid. People are supposed to beg you for your money. I mean, if a girl came up to you and tell you, come on, Rob, let's go to bed right now, wouldn't you be suspected of that? Huh? I mean, people usually have to beg you for their money, your money.
That's
but
funny, man.
You can go up and just give it away.
Yeah, just give it away.
Use the old cliche about the prostitute on the corner, who we complain.
I mean, it's sort of like, okay, well, hey,
well,
you got a paycheck.
Prostitute on the corner when she goes into a hotel room and let her body be penetrated by a perfectly a stranger.
Yeah.
Lay up on the bed and let her body be penetrated by a stranger. Well, hell, blacks do the same thing. They let their economic markets be penetrated by strangers, immigrants.
Mm.
Oh, so who is the better prostitute?
Ooh, ooh, Brother Pianca. Brother Pianca, let's listen to some Dr. Clark real quick, okay?
All right.
Our crisis today, the crisis in Somalia, the crisis in Africa, the crisis in the Caribbean islands, the crisis in the United States, that we have lost from our historical memory the time when we were in charge of the state. And when we rule the state, it's a methodology taken out of our mind and not the mind of a foreigner, a faker, and a fool. When independence came to Africa, when the concept of independence came to the Caribbean islands, when we had our charade called the Civil Rights Movement, nobody was fighting to be totally independent of that former slave master. In some way, we were all crawling to get back on the plantation. We were fighting to consume his hamburger. We were fighting for the right to make our oppressor rich. So we did not understand the nature of liberation. And if you do not understand the nature of liberation, mentally, you are still a slave. Now, the slavery that we still must grapple with started in the 15th and the 16th century. Slavery started in the world when man emerged in the world and developed a fear and a weakness of other people and felt that they had to enslave another people to feel safe. That was one kind of slavery, but slavery based solely on race, on color. That's the slavery hatched from the European mind in the 15th and the 16th century. For there were periods when Europeans enslaved Europeans, Jews enslaved Jews. Now my focal point is that for most of your existence on this earth, you lived in independent states fashioned by your own mind. And that this great event has been removed from your historical memory. I want you to travel with me just a little while while we go behind that slavery curtain and see what did you do when you were in charge of the state all by yourself. You didn't ask any foreigner to assist you in any way, and you ruled the state exceptionally well. In some places, you ruled so exceptionally well, you had no word for jail in your language because no one had ever gone to one. You create words to describe what happened. If no one ever gone to something called a jail, you don't need a word for one. If you never threw away children, you needed no word for orphanage. If the life between a man and a woman worked and functioned because of the support system coming from both sides of the family, you never heard of a thing called divorce. Well, no one ever got one. You got mixed up with someone else's thing. Now understand me. I have gone over again over cultural incubation. When you come out of a cultural womb, the chemistry of that womb shapes your personality. When someone puts you into another wound, it's like putting you into the stomach of someone who's not your mother. The chemistry of your personality is shaped another way. Therefore, you had no wife visas in Africa. You had no teenage pregnancy in Africa. So your worst traits were picked up from your oppressor because you were living in a state that you did not fashion. And because the state that you fashioned was removed from your historical memory, when finally you develop semi-independence because you had forgotten how you ruled the state, you became the imitators of the people who put you in that second incubator where the chemistry of your personality changed to suit the slave master's chemistry and not the original chemistry of your birth.
Greetings. Welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. Hey, Brother Pianchi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that mind, it's the mind that's being destroyed. That's what we got. We got too
it's
many
something
minds.
It's something worse than the mind. I don't know what it is myself. You know, I was just thinking, you know, and blacks used to have we used to have Billy Burks. Billy Burks sold the best hamburgers and cheeseburgers and french fries that you could ever eat. Blacks boycotted Billy Burks for McDonald's. Blacks boycotted Billy Burks for Burger King. We used to have Bee's Grill. We used to have Crown restaurants where you can go in and sit down and eat a very good, wholesome meal. We had Eternity Deli where you could go in and get vegetarian food and raw food. Blacks boycotted those restaurants for Country Buffet. Blacks boycotted the black restaurants for Denny's restaurants. You understand what I'm saying? They boycotted the black restaurants for... Doggone it, what's this other thing? Where here in our in our area, when 10 o'clock, they turn the heat off in the wintertime, so it'd make the place get cold and Negroes would get up out of there.
Damn.
I can't think of the name of the place, but you understand what I'm talking about.
I know. I've seen it. And what one of the things that I've learned is that it's that all out, it's that marketing thing. It's how you market it. And this really going to – I've worked in a few places, and these are white-owned establishments. These are big hotels. I worked in Marriott's Hotel, Marriott, Hyatt's, Renaissance, few places. And what I noticed was you always got somebody coming in who owns some stuff. And I remember working in this one place, and the person doing the – one of the persons working the grill, because it was my job to go ahead and create salads, and call this called garmage. Do a lot of stuff with salads, do them right away, you know, saute some stuff, blah, blah, blah. But the guy was doing the grill, he was making hamburgers for this one ticket that came in, and he sent it out. And I could see the server come back with a messed up look on her face. And I was like, damn, what the hell happened? So she threw the plate on the counter under the heat lamp, and she was like, hey, look at that. We got close, and when the guy, the grill man, lifted the bun up, it was a roach on the bun, on the burger, a dead roach. Now I was saying, man, what the hell? Where'd that come from? You know, I was standing right here watching this dude taking out there. These cats, what I'm saying is that this guy, he didn't seem like the type of normal customer that came through. He looked shady. And I'm seeing that the only thing that was going through my mind was, you know, back then and even now, somebody sent him here to go ahead and help ruin this place. That's all. To help ruin this place. This guy was starting to get crazy. He wanted to see the manager and blah. He was talking about calling his lawyer and everything. He made a big scene. Now, this was a big restaurant they had. A big. I'm going to tell you how place this was. That burger that this guy was being charged for at that time was $14.
Hell yeah. Well, what I was telling him, I said, Sarah, we hear you. What we're going to do is keep this roach and send it to the lab and analyze and see if it did originate from here.
Well, I don't know what they told this dude. I don't know what they told him. But it was some people came up, then they talked and went on to the side, and dude just walked on out.
Or you should have told him, said, well, sir, give us time to look at the surveillance camera and we can see whether or not the roach came out of the kitchen or was it put there after it left the kitchen.
But if they go ahead and they do that to their own, imagine what they'll do to us. That's my point.
Well, I understand what you said, man, but hell, they had a IHOP here where African-American, in the African-American community, and supposedly a girl found a roach in her pancakes.
Oh, my goodness.
And took a picture of it with a cell phone. But blacks still go to the place.
Ooh.
It's owned by Indians now.
Oh, right.
Cambodians own practically all your donut shops in California.
Oh, really?
Yep. Dunkin' Donuts was bought out by Indians here. I don't think they're in business anymore, though.
It was at one time in California, Dunkin' Donuts.
Not Dunkin' Donuts, Winchell Donuts. You remember them?
Yeah, they don't really see, I don't see them too much around anymore. You know, for me, I'm going to be honest with you, you know, brother. It's a lot of stuff, man. It's rare for me to catch me going to a restaurant, man. Right now, let me see. I got about maybe almost 20 pounds of cookie dough. I make my own cookies. I got some stuff out there. Maybe if I need sweets, I go ahead and make my own shit. You know, that way I know what's in it. I don't go to a lot of restaurants or whatever I want. I go here. I make myself most of the time. So a lot of these places, I don't even remember what a lot of the names of these places are. If I catch something in the news or something on them, I go here and I try to take that in. But I can't go to no more places. I've worked in them.
Well, I don't need. I go to a Nigerian restaurant. I go to the Senegalese restaurant.
Right. Yeah, one of my buddies on he's born in Nigeria. He got a restaurant. I go, and as a matter of fact, with him, I go up there with him on some Mondays, and I go and I hang out in the kitchen with them and playing around with them sometime, man. I have a lot of fun. I learn a lot of stuff, and we converse about a lot of things. We're doing some stuff also, so that's why I go up there and talk to him, because I go in there and cook in his restaurant, because sometimes on Mondays, one of his employees, and it's been as of late, one of his employees can't make it, so I come in and step in, and I let him know.
You watch
you know,
how
you don't be treating me like people.
Huh?
Say it again?
You watch how they prepare their red sauce?
Yeah, man. I saw that.
How they took the red peppers, the red peppers, and grind them up, but blend them with the red onion.
Right. See, and you know, and something else, because a few times I'm seeing them doing with dry this, dry that. One thing I'm trying to get them to do is when they got the fresh part, when they're doing like the fresh ingredients with the bell peppers, they don't want to take the skin off. I'm trying to show them how to get to go ahead and smoke that skin right off, and it's better because it leaves a lot less.
Yeah, it does. I take mine and do it like that, but it's hard to peel that skin off of there, man. How you get I usually put mine on a hot. Well, I laid mine down and
Come on, listen, bro. Let me show you how to get that skin off real easy. Okay, you got to roast them. Okay, you got direct heat hitting them. Direct heat hitting them. Let them go ahead and turn a little dark on the outside. Then take them off the grill and throw them in some bags. And let that steam just go ahead and let that steam will go ahead and help that darkness on the outside peel right off. It'll also help roast it to help with the taste. So you pull
what
that.
Kind of bags?
Say again?
What kind of
bags? Yeah, some Ziploc bags. I keep them. I store my food in a lot of times in Ziploc bags. Label it and go ahead and keep it moving.
I do mine like that too, but I get tired of trying to peel the skin off. I let them blacken too, but
that's the part that you got to pull that off. You pull that right off. It's also gonna flavor it. Then you go ahead and you get the seeds out. Then you blend it. These cats don't want to do it. They're like, oh no.
I do the mine before. By the time I peel it, I slap that dude between a bun and eat it. And roasted red peppers are good.
Man, okay, man, yeah, I agree, man. They are pretty good.
Man, roasted red peppers are delicious, man. And
they are pretty good. I like just a little salt, little pepper, man. They're pretty good. You know, I throw a little olive oil on a bun, man. That's it.
But
let me play a song real quick, Brother Bianchi, man. Okay. I need to take a quick.
My mama by her baby cousin on the Sunday. It was the best to be with these four from the rains. Oh, I see it every day, right before my eyes. Another road boy gets saved from another gunplay. Oh, and it's the teaching that she provides, the slaying of so much life. But still, steep lucky fools wanna go their way. There is some rude boys hanging in the alley. And if you pass them, me say you're lucky. It's a trigger happy one of proven skills. They give him Joe quick to kill. Gangsters are living high, like they wanna touch the sky. They don't care if another man leave or another man die. Don't bother leaving. Gangsta life. Don't bother leaving. But this is like a dream to close. I know everyone is feeling so. Gangsta life. Don't bother leaving. Gangsta life. Don't bother leaving. He's still got his life, but somebody don't respect him. That's not what we want for the younger generation. But you have a one only chica happy, and a one like you a jan daddy. Wanna chucky, wanna bossy, don't you brother in a dopey. Take the life, don't bother living. Take the life.
Conversations you were having with AC, and it was that word exploit.
Yeah.
In that video, the Powernomics, which I want to go ahead and get that particular part where he's talking about creating the what is it called? I'm going to the leather business.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about going ahead and setting up things down in Haiti. Because he's talking about, you know, the workforce there and then the wages and everything. And I was you know, AC has been a little bit sick. Okay, so he's going through some stuff right now. So I mean that's why I've been trying, you know, yeah, I'm trying to get him back, but you know, he ain't really up to it too much. He's got a couple of problems, he's got some major health issues too. But I was trying to go ahead and I wish he was here to go ahead and say something, because I kinda understand that word exploitation as where you're putting it. And we need to go ahead and open that stuff up, because we got a lot of brothers and sisters out here out of work. So that could also go ahead and help a whole lot of people, and also give them that the tanning thing he was talking about. So you know, how do you feel about that going ahead and getting into that leather, going ahead and putting out the leather goods like the brother was talking about in the video?
Well, yeah, anything that you can, if you got a market for it, I'd identify the market first before you venture off into these things, unless you want to try to be a stylist and create a market.
Mm. Okay. Because I know some people who, it's rare. I mean, I only came across man, in a lot of years. This guy is a tailor, and he's also a cobbler. He makes shoes and everything he got on, he make. Everything he wear, well, except, you know, when he wear, like, more like, you know, tennis shoes, sneakers and stuff. But his shoes, his shoes and stuff, he go ahead and he make them.
But you're not going to make that stuff. You're not going to make that those things here in the United States and be competitive because the labor is too expensive. You can, like but I told you. Well, you can buy a pair of brand new alligator shoes over in Senegal in the leather market for about $100, $125.
$100? You know how much that? You know how much that costs here, man? And if you get them made, oh my goodness, that's a lot of money. Hold on, brother Pianchi, I got up. Young God, you there?
Hotel,
brother, how you feeling?
I'm feeling wonderful, wonderful.
Greetings to give greetings to brother Pianchi's on the other line.
Peace, God greetings.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, you hadn't been here, young guy. I wish you could have got caught up, man. But you know, basically it's a Powernomics. You know, how can you add to that, man? What do you have to go ahead and contribute to this right now?
Well, what I can say is economic efficiency. It's definitely something that we should be looking to do. You know, we talk about a lot of things in the conscious community. We talk about a lot of solutions and a lot of ways that we can get out this problem. But one thing that we never put in aspect is the finances or the economics that it's going to take to get us out of this problem. We talk about physical fixes, but we don't want to talk about financial fixes. So I think economic efficiency is definitely something we need to be looking for. We need to be looking for things that we can get our hands in on the commerce tip, where we can make more money to support some of the solutions that we put out. A lot of us want to create programs. A lot of us want to create occupational jobs for people, but we don't have the financial backing to do so. We got it, but we don't want to come together and actually put it together. So anytime we talk about economics, we have to talk about people's lifestyles. We have to talk about how people live, because a lot of people, you know, they talk about it all day. Oh, we need to do this, do this. But when it comes down to really putting money together, and when it comes down to coming together on an organization itself, a lot of people back off, you know. So that's definitely something that that we be talking about. We be sitting down figuring out how to, as a community or as an organization, whatever we want to call ourselves, how we're going to get together and get the economics so that we can support some of these solutions, because, you know, we're in a terrible time right now. Hello? Hello?
I don't know what happened to him.
I'm still here.
Hold on.
Okay, I was trying to go ahead and get your brother Pianki. Brother Pianki.
Yeah.
Based off what the young gun has said, man. Is there any, in your opinion, which particular group do you think that has the most potential going ahead and making something and sticking with something?
What you mean group?
Okay, like what Dr. Claude Anderson is doing, you know, with his idea.
Well, yeah, his idea is a very good idea. He's been talking it for a long time. And
are there any other individuals out here who got a similar idea?
No, but I can tell you who done his idea. Your Arabs and your Asians done his idea amongst black people.
Wow. Okay.
If you guys catch me up to just exactly what his plan was, I'm not too clear on that.
Brother Pianki, you talked to him personally, so, you know, go ahead. Can you explain a little bit more before I go ahead and I go into it?
Go ahead and play his video, his audio.
Well, you know, yeah, okay. I'll come back. Let me find that. Let me get that little part. I'll play this, because it's only that little part I got. This thing about that blacks in China. So, yeah, let us again.
All over America on Friday evening, go to any big city, and you'll see blacks lined up to get into Chinatown to go to China, eat some Chinese food. Have you ever seen Chinese lined up trying to get into a black town? Somebody is not playing with a full deck. You're not playing the game to win. You're just playing. And you got to stop spending your money. So then I go to various cities, and blacks got the nasty habit, when company comes, putting them in their car on a Sunday and taking them out to the white community and say, let me go out and show you some nice white homes. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Let's go out to look at the white malls. And then they come back home and say, how in the world can white folk afford all those fine homes and big houses? It's easy. It's your money. You see what I'm saying? And y'all think I'm teasing. See, they're living off of two incomes. They live off 100% of their income and 95% of yours. And you're trying to live off of 2%. It is humanly impossible for a race of people to live off of 2% of their income. And in America, you equate human worth based on what you own. And if black folk don't own 2%, that's why white racists say black folk ain't worth 2 cents. Because we don't own anything, and human worth is equated in this country based on what you own and control. And we violate all the premises of economics. We have yet to learn how to practice group economics. And the last thing about integration is that integration got a quota system, and you need to know this. It's got a quota system. You hear white somebody against quotas, they're wrong. It got a quota system. Anytime you get more than 5 to 8% of blacks involved in anything, whites are going to put up chains. They're going to stop you. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks move into their community, they're going to put their house up for sale. If more than 5% of blacks, 8% of blacks go into their schools, they're going to pull their kids out of school. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their businesses, they're going to move the business out of town, cross town, out of the country. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their association, they'll resign. They got a quota system. And people say, well, blacks are against affirmative action. No, they're not against affirmative action. They're against affirmative action for you. You see, they're against the set aside. Racism is nothing but preferential treatment for whites. They say they're against preferential treatment. You hear them say they're against set aside. Jim Crowism was nothing but a 100-year set aside program for whites. So they set aside the best restaurants, the best food, the best schools for whites. They say they're against quotas. You got a quota system, I told you, in the immigration laws. Today, you still are a planned minority. You can't win. So now let me get to some solutions for you very quickly. I have a few more minutes I got left. What we're going to do across this country now is what we call powernomics. There's a new book coming out called Powernomics Unleashing Black American Potential. It's a follow-up to the book Black Labor, White Wealth. It'll show you in very specific terms what you got to do to be competitive. The things you got to focus on is in broad categories with specific principles. The first is a community. You cannot do anything unless you have a community. Your community is your social cohesiveness. The only power, the potential that black people have in America is your social, racial cohesiveness. If you don't have that, you have no power. Forget about everything else. That's a fact of life. You got to have a community because the community will give you your businesses. It'll give you your sales opportunities and your markets. Now, how do you develop communities? First thing you must do is stay out of all cross-purpose issues. Cross-purpose means horizontal issues. Don't get involved in any horizontal issues. Let me explain it to you. I see the puzzlements in your eyes. First, racism is vertical. Remember this. Racism is straight up and down. Racism means I don't care whether you are the lowest income black or the highest, the best educated or the least educated. It doesn't make any difference. You're all in the same tube. Okay? That's what Malcolm X was asking. What is a black man with a PhD? Remember that saying? He answered, well, he's still a Negro. Okay? It means it doesn't make any difference. You're all in it together. That's straight up and down. Horizontal issues are any issue that pertains to everybody. Stay out of it. You're the weakest and poorest, most vulnerable people. Don't get involved in it. Because the only people that can benefit are those people who are directly behind where the horizontal crosses the vertical. Okay? The only people who benefit are where those two points cross. That's too small. You don't have that kind of energy and resources to waste. Now, what's a horizontal issue? Sexism is a horizontal issue. When you get into these various religious issues, that's a horizontal issue. Poverty is a horizontal issue. I keep telling some of my civil rights leaders, stay away from poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is a fix. It's a given. You're always going to have poor people. And people say, well, you're going to have poor Greeks, poor Indians, poor Lithuanians, poor Hungarians. Quit trying to eradicate poverty and trying to get as many black folk as you out and leave poverty alone. But they try to eradicate something that can't be eradicated. Culturalism. That's a horizontal issue. That pertains to everybody. Let me give you about sexism, for instance. I tell black women who always want to get into sex issues, they think that somehow that the issue is sex rather than racism. See, my great-grandmother was not enslaved because she's a woman. She was enslaved because she was black. Okay? And if you're going to get into sexism, I want black women to understand this, to keep your priorities in order. If I say abracadabra right now and sexism disappeared, you still can't go any place because you're black. And to keep it in order, remember what your mother felt. The minute she knew she was pregnant, she knew at that moment she was going to have what? A black child long before she knew the sex. So you keep your priorities straight and say, since my color came before my sex, I'm going to keep it in that order. You always say black first. So stay out of those cross prepositions. I'll explain all the next time I come back out here on a Powernomics workshop or something. But that's very important. I can show you all the problems you got with that. And see, but once you stay out of those horizontal issues, like I tell some of my Muslim friends, I said, don't be worried about pushing Islamic faith. Push your skin color first and stay aligned with your people. And I tell them, the people in the Baptist church, quit worrying about about being a Baptist and worry about being black. And again, I have to give credit to your minister. It seems like he's one of the few in the country who understands that. That you put who you are and as a people before you start talking about what denomination you belong to. And especially since most of the denominations on the earth all work together to enslave black folk. All of them pimp and hustle black folk. The Catholics, the Protestants, the Baptists, the Jews, and everybody else got black folk. But what we're going to do then is start, once we get past building these communities, then we're going to start getting into what we call practicing building alternative action.
Okay. Hey, Brother Pianchi.
Yeah.
Hey, that brother, his line fell off real quick, but, you know, it was still the same stuff that was said that it need to be paid attention to. I mean, the whole thing needs to be played over and over and over so we get it.
Yeah, I would say so. It's very good information.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and, tomorrow night I'm going to do also a show tomorrow night. So
it should be curriculum material. I keep telling people, they always talking about drawing up curriculums. The curriculum ain't right. I said, well, you got all sorts of resources for curriculum. Just use it. What he said can be used to construct sentences what he said can be used to enact literature.
Right. You know, and that was some of the stuff he was also saying. You know, educate our people. Let them know what's happening out here. I mean, I don't trust politicians. And it's some people I'm working with, and this one sister in our camp, man, that she's constantly talking about running to the politicians. And for me personally, I feel that, hey, look, we run into the politicians on our knees. Ain't nobody going to listen to you like that big. We got to have something to back it. Don't nobody want to listen to you. We are on our knees going ahead. I don't want to go be begging to nobody. Let me build up my camp from within, and then go ahead and I put my security on the outside. So always go ahead and you pick your spot, and then you go ahead and you go ahead and check out your perimeter, and then you go ahead and you put in securities in place, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that's what I'm about, and that's what I'm trying to work with some people I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little rough with all that, man. You know, some people ain't getting it. Hold on, I got another caller. 301.
Thank you, Chef. Yeah, this is Black Achievement.
How you feeling, man?
Good afternoon, Yankee. Great.
Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. And thank you, Chef, for taking my call. Let me say, you know, I'm on board with Dr. Claude Anderson. I think he's by far the most relevant voice in our community. I just want to add this. What he's talking about, essentially, is war. That's what he's talking about. I've seen it with my own eyes. To carry out the plan that Dr. Claude Anderson is talking about is tantamount to waging war. We will have no friends in this. If black people stop spending money with Koreans, with Jews, with whites in general, with Arabs, the whole nation will wage war. I have no doubt if we stop buying black hair care products from the Koreans that the federal government will come in and subsidize their businesses. I know this. Black leaders are told, do not talk about black people in a substantive manner. Do not talk about a quote-unquote black agenda, particularly as it concerns economics. Do not talk about things that are relevant to your community. What you have to do is take up everybody else's nationalism, everybody else's agenda, and take that to your people and sell it to them and make them buy into it, okay? We buy into same-sex marriage. We have to. We buy into the immigration issues. We have to. We buy into everybody else's concept of nationalism, and we always deny and reject our own. There's no mistaking. That is done purposefully. Black leaders, as you stated, cannot speak on this. They cannot engage in economic warfare with other people. They are not permitted. And if they don't play ball, it's another line of black folk who are waiting in the wing, who will pop in their place. And we as a people have got to understand. We've got to be more vigilant about what's going on so that we know who and what these people are. And to then, it's not going to change. It simply is not going to change until we recognize what is being done, what is going on. You don't want a job, man. You don't want a job, black people. Jobs is not our issue. You want businesses. You want corporations. You want to be able to build things. You want to be fully ensconced in American society. That's what you want. I looked at now in here, Chef and Pianchi. I'm sorry for belaboring the point. But I was watching a documentary on the Lower Manhattan, the rebuilding of the World Trade Center and the monuments and all of that. Man, I kid you not, I watched 2 hours of this documentary about them rebuilding this thing. Man, I didn't see one black face of the construction workers.
Yeah, I complain about
it. The World Trade or the monument. Not one black face. But when time came for us to do a little something, like, for example, the King Memorial or whatever it is, we decide to bow out and let everybody else come in and take care of it. I mean, that's our mentality. How can you build a King monument to Dr. King? I know it's just a monument. I know it. But black folk not be involved in it other than the singing.
Hey, let me check in. I don't even think it was a black contractor.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. You know, they didn't have black contractors. I mean, not even the landscaping. I was down there.
Check this out, B.A. I want you to go ahead and comment on what you were saying, what you typed in the chat room, you know, like Reverend Ike taught this.
Oh,
you know,
Yeah.
If you go back to Reverend
60s,
Ike.
Yeah, I'm going back to Reverend Frederick Eichenrind Cotter.
I mean,
do you
physically go back to Reverend Ike?
Yeah.
I didn't know you was that old.
Well, no. What Reverend Ike was saying back then is just as indelible as what Dr. King was saying, as what Malcolm X was saying, as what.
Hold on a minute. Wait a minute. Who was Reverend Ike?
Reverend Ike was a forerunner to prosperity gospel, prosperity preachers. He was Creflo Dollar before Creflo. He was T.D. Jakes before T.D. Jakes.
He was black?
Yes, he was black. Very charismatic. Some people called him a flim-flam man. You know, some people didn't put a lot of stock into what he was saying because he was the counter. Let me say this. Thanks, Chef. During the 60s, a lot of people like to say that the counter to Dr. King, right, was Malcolm X. That is so far from the truth. Dr. King and Malcolm X were never adversaries. Truthfully, Malcolm X was on the fringes of black society, okay? In the heart of black America, there were two competing voices. There was the prophetic voice in terms of helping your brother, doing something to end poverty, doing something against the war. That was headed by Dr. King, the prophetic Christian missionary work, Dr. King. And then there was another group said, no, I don't want nothing to do with poor people. I don't want the poor people around me. That ain't my issue. Okay? We need to get some of this for ourselves. If you can name it, you can claim it. There were people who said the best thing you can do for poor people is not be one of them. That was Reverend Ike. Reverend Ike was telling black folk, no, we got to get this. We got to get out of the ghetto and into the get-mo. That was Reverend Ike. Reverend Ike was saying what Dr. Carter is saying today, that black people need to get some of this economic wealth, economic riches. And when you get it, Reverend Ike was saying to black people, when you are blessed and when you get this prosperity, he was saying you need to put it in people's faces.
America, black achievement, you know what? That's why come you had preachers like Sullivan up in Brooklyn, who built all them houses and started that training program that was like in over 160 cities across the country and trained about 200,000 blacks. That's why you had Floyd Flake down in Meridian, Mississippi, whose congregation was like 96% on welfare. And within months, they had bought like a 4,000-acre farm. They had meat processing. They had tractors. They had bakeries. They had auto repair places. Everybody was off of welfare in a period of time. So they are coming off of that philosophy of Reverend Ike.
Yes. I'm not saying Reverend Ike was perfect, not by no stretch.
But I'm going to have to look into this Reverend Ike dude, because I kind of seen the name around. I never really paid attention to him.
At his best, Chef. At his best. Oh, he was right on point. The way in which he viewed the Bible and the verses. Maybe before the end of your show, I can go on YouTube and get some clips and post them in your chat room. But things change as time go on, man. I'm talking about the 60s and 70s. As he changed, as he moved into the 90s, and he died about 3 years ago, and one of his heir apparents today is Bernard Jordan. I don't know if you know some of these guys. You know, they all sit at the feet of Reverend Ike. You know, they all sit at the feet of Reverend Ike. And Reverend Ike, he came up with, of course, the economic principles. He mixed that in, and then he was working with some. I don't know if you're familiar with Reverend Norman Ben Pelt, The Power of Positive Thinking. Mixed a little bit of that. There was some other thing. Also, he grew up, you know, the Southern Baptist type of ministries that blacks had. You know, again, where the preacher was very flamboyant. You know, he drove nice carriages or nice cars to attract people. Sort of like the putting the pimp in the game, if you will, if I can use that expression. But it was a mixture of all of that stuff coming along up in Harlem, or you know, further north in Washington Heights, that area. But again, it was just another take. That's all it was. That he was telling people what to do in economics. And
hold on
again,
a minute, hold
it was
a counter. You there?
Yeah.
Hotep, Hotep,
brother. What do you think about what you're hearing?
I'm just listening. I know a little bit about Reverend Ike. I heard a little bit about him, but I'm really just trying to get caught up with that.
Wait, hold on. Tell me what you heard about.
One thing that I see that we lacking though, but you know, off what I heard, the difference between our movements and the movements of the past is, a lot of people were struggling real bad in the past. It was like it was a struggle, and it was out blatant. Everybody knew. Although, you know, certain people couldn't describe it, they knew it was a struggle, and we need to help against this. Nowadays, most people think that we're comfortable. Like you say, we got our small jobs, and we got, you know, our occupations every day. So the struggle is not calling for us to come together and put things together like that. That's why it's not a lot of, you know, people like minds that's willing to come together and say, you know what, no matter what religion, no matter what you is, let's come together and get some economic efficiency and build communities. Let's come together and get something that we can sell. Because, see, you can even look at the Mexicans. The Mexicans, they have that stable. All they do is turn the corner with their corn. They get the corn stands, and they get their Mexican corn, and they had a whole family work that, and they only had license to do so. But that's because the Mexicans come together. As black people, we have to be willing to come together first. Before we talk about anything, we have to talk about coming together, because one person can't do it by themselves. We need a congregation.
Well,
black people
are together. I mean, we need to get away from the notion that black folks are together. When you go home, look around in your neighborhood, unless you live in the central. I mean, you got the far one side, and you got the far the other side, and you got those in the middle. But black folks are already together. You got 18 counties in Mississippi on either side of the west or east side of the Mississippi River, where the majority of the population in those 18 counties are black folks.
But when I say together, I don't mean together as in bunched up or living in the same community together. When I say together, I mean together as in coming together with like minds, meaning that we have a mission, this is our goal. Let's say if you live in the Woodlawn community, we all know that the Woodlawn community is predominantly black, of course. Not even Woodlawn, let's say the Englewood community. The Englewood community is predominantly black, and people are together as in, you know, bunched together, but nobody is really together as in a mission. Nobody has the common. A community is what? It's common unity. That means we're coming together with things that's common and we're unifying, you know? So nobody is coming together in our community on an economical base trying to say we're going to be, or we let the Mexicans, like I said, back to Texas, we let the Mexicans come in our community and cut our grass.
Yeah, I agree with you there now. We don't come together. We come together, but we come together on the things which is not conducive to controlling your economics. We got the Crips, the Blood, we had the Vice Lords, you have the, you know, these fraternity groups and things, but they're not like the fraternity groups of the time of your Reverend Ike. Your churches today, they're not like the churches of the time of Reverend Ike. So that's the difference. And one of the key culprits in all that is government. Government is either taking care or supplementing too much of the lives of people. Then you make them lazy. It's just like if you take a bear out of the zoo and put him in the woods, he wouldn't work, he wouldn't survive very long because he's used to being having all his needs taken care of or part of his needs.
We have became comfortable with insanity in our community, and even those who try to fight against what's going on in some way, shape, form, or fashion, they get reprimanded by the people in the community for trying to spark and make change. The reason why the preacher is so successful in doing his job is just what the brother just said, because he drives a nice car, he smells good, he looks good, he got a beautiful wife. Every Sunday he got on a different suit. This is why the preacher is successful, because when people look at him, they see money. Black people give to money. That's why the average black person, if they see the guy on the corner selling some socks, we don't, even though we know we have the money to support, we don't say, nah, brother. But we're going to take ourselves right to the Chinese, right to the Arabs, right to any other race, and we have spent our money with them. So black people, we give to money. We don't give to our own. We don't look at our people like, okay, yeah, our people have money. Let's donate. Let's give towards the organized fund, because we have no trust. The average black person, when they see five young black youth on the street, they locking their doors. There's no trust at all. The average black person has the economics to start a program right now, but because of the materialistic things that block that vision, they're not going to put their money in. They're going to go buy a car. They're going to go buy a new TV. They're going to go buy a new iPhone. We got 4G, so they're going to get a new 4G phone. They're not going to look out for the community. So we have to get our priorities straight, because our priorities is not straight in our community. We have to have more people who are willing to, like we're doing that, sit down and have these conversations so that solutions get hashed out. But when we get off the phone, the work should not stop. And that's one of our big problems. After we leave the meetings, after we get all drunk and high off the information and we feel good, we leave like we just said something real powerful. Where is the work? Where does the work? And I know a lot of people might be doing work as individuals, but on a big scale, where is the work being done? You know, we're not successful in the conscious community because we have no people who are willing to put in their time, put in their energy, and put in their money. A lot of the things that we want to happen, we can make happen as individuals, but we have to be willing to give our time. A lot of us, we work jobs. Since we work jobs, we can't be at certain needs. Since we work jobs, we can't do certain things. It's a hindrance towards our time. We're doing everything at once. So the little time that we do put aside for the consciousness is maybe an hour, 2 hours, and that never helps us grow. If we want to see things change, a lot of us are going to have to dedicate our lives to this. The reason why Malcolm made the changes is because Malcolm, when he got into the information, he dedicated his life to it. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to it. Haile Selassie, Marcus Garvey, all these people dedicated their lives to it. That means they ate, slept, drank, Google, everything consciousness. Everything that they did was about the awakening of our black people. So that's what I feel we're going to have to put an aspect. We're going to have to put an aspect dedicating our lives to it and making sacrifices so that we can see the change we want to see.
Any comments, any questions? Hello?
Yeah. I'm there.
Okay. Oh, man. Okay, brother, your line open. Brother Pianchi, you want to comment on what you just heard?
No, well said.
Well said. Young God, continue.
But that's the basic thing. That's one of the reasons why the preacher is so successful. Even when you look in our community, the drug dealer is successful and with his mission. The drug dealer is so successful because the drug dealer has money. Everybody knows that he's selling drugs in the community, but nobody's gonna pick up the phone to call the police. Nobody's gonna stop that process because he has money. A lot of us even speak to him and get us some, you know? That's why the drug dealer and the preacher are the two people that's successful is because the way they look. People have to put that same thing and aspect in the conscious community. We cannot be pro-white to teach. We cannot not have anything and then expect to go to people and we got this million-dollar idea. We want to be a business. We want to build a community. We want to do all this, but we don't have the finances to back. Why a lot of Caucasians are born into wealth. That means their parents have left an inheritance for them. As black people, we don't have an inheritance. Our people don't look for giving towards leaving children anything. So therefore, when the child is born, that child automatically has to begin to survive for itself. Period. The child might not have the right food in the house. The child might not have the right hygiene products. The child might not have the proper teaching in that house. So automatically, the child begins to go outside the home and start looking from outside sources. And the person that the child usually falls into is, like I just mentioned, the preacher and the drug dealer. So we have to look at the economic stability so that we can make moves towards the future. Because if we don't get economically stable, all of our uses, all of our thoughts, you know, really won't mean anything. And things are only going to perpetuate and nothing will change. We have to come together on the basis. Hold on, one second, Rob, hold on.
Okay, let me play this track real quick.
Oh, my girl, you tell me so you have something to tell me. No, you see me right now, please tell me. You can't deny my love. You can't deny my love. Sexy Italia, come sing for me.
Moment of honesty.
What it made us look crazy. introducing sexy Titania.
Greetings and welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. Brother Bianchi, Brother B.A., how we doing?
Doing good.
Hey, Brother B.A., you still there? Oh, man, because I wanted him to chime on some of that that Reverend Ike stuff. Brother Bianchi, can you tell me a little bit more about this Reverend Ike guy?
Reverend Ike was out on the East Coast. What we knew about him, we just heard. And that was a movie that came out where doggone, I can't think who the guy was that played him. And I think the movie was Cotton Comes to Harlem. I'm not sure. But he was a character. But, you know, in everyone, there's good and bad. And you have to, as they say, eat the fish and spit out the bones. And back then, during those times, people were more about do for self. And I say people, but leaders, people that spoke, had a message of do for self and on your own. Basically, because we didn't have any alternative. Actually, being that Arabs own gasoline stations in your inner city, the prices are just as cheap as they are in the outlying areas. Whereas when whites own them, you would pay about a dollar more a gallon or more.
You know, the gas prices are going down now. You know, what does that contribute to?
Because of the election.
I agree. I totally agree.
Election and demand, yeah. Gas price is very complicated.
What do you mean? Gas demand? That don't make the kind of, you know, I always had a problem with that supply and demand thing. That kind of don't make sense to me.
Well, it's supply and demand. The less the demand, then there's no need to do the pumping. Your storage facilities can only store some more. Once the demand decreased and your storage facilities become full, then they're gonna slack off on production and slack off on delivery, accepting delivery, taking deliveries. So they want to try to get rid of what they have in order to kick back up production. Nobody that's doing well in business and a business that's labor intense, they don't want to get rid of their labor force because the labor force is a key component of the operation. So they would rather have the business running. It don't have to run wide open, but it needs to be running so they can keep people on the payroll.
You know, the thing in Claude Anderson's piece about going ahead, like I kind of mentioned, I wanted to get a little bit more out of you about that exploitation thing and brothers and sisters in Haiti. And then he also will talk about the problems in New Orleans, you know, at that time. This was before Hurricane Katrina. That video came out. So in New Orleans, and them problems were there before Hurricane Katrina. They don't have as many people there right now, because I got a buddy, man, he tells me about some things. But you don't have as many people there now, but you still, the black folks there, they still, if you go ahead and look at them, they're still like an 80-90% unemployment rate there. You know, that's some place where we can go ahead and put some folks to work, too.
Yeah, you can revitalize the fishing industry there, or start up a fishing industry and utilize your people. Utilize your people to get things moving in the New Orleans area.
Yeah, you know, but you know, we still got that thing about, hey, how do I go ahead and take this cattle prod and put it up your ass and get you to moving?
Well, that's the thing. We're not talking in along those lines like we should. A few of us are, but many of us not. And then again, it takes research, because when you haven't engaged in a thing and you're thinking about going into it, it takes a lot of research. You have to study how these components come together. You have to visit up and running operations and observe them, ask questions, follow it from A to Z.
Which ones?
Well, any of them. There's a lot of them out there. As I always say, if you're going to start a business, compete with what is going on now. You know who you have to compete against. The United States still have agriculture industry. It still have the technology industry where it's developing technology.
Well, Carl Anderson was saying, hey, look, if you don't get behind technology, you're doomed. Technology is killing black folks because they trying to go ahead and be a part of it. You know, people standing in line to go ahead and get the newest iPhone and all that shit, man. So I say go ahead and try to build your own shit. You know, fuck buying any bullshit.
Well, you use the technology for the wrong purpose. And even if you do buy some of these items, we use them for the wrong purpose. We use them for the entertainment purpose rather than the business potential that each and every one has.
Hold on, Brother Pianca. Let me play another clip real quick, man. Let me see if I get this other one. It's a song, man, but it was way back, and it was something that was overlooked, man. I keep playing it, and I was hoping people would go ahead and pick up on this. But what it does, for me, playing a song like this, just go ahead and reinforce it. Stuff that's been put out there in front of us, we don't go ahead and really get involved in. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, that's a fact.
Because the Trayvon Martin thing, this ain't nothing new. You know, I'm in Chicago. I mean, this shit happening every fucking day. Hey, listen to this.
From the slave ship to the chain, from the taskmaster's whip to my brain, kidnapped, enslaved, raped and killed by the Lynch clan again and again. Is it the origin of the skin or the face of a race? Why you don't care about me?
Now I know you don't care about me. I'm just a nigga walking down the street. The brother did nothing wrong, but now his life is gone. So I know you don't care about me. Put a silence, you said. Get your action, speak so loud. Our ancestors were believed bunches and are sticks and whips and kicks and punches. Meanwhile, you're living like some Brady Bunches. Tell me where the justice, much less the sanctions. We're worth much more than the drinking tankies. And we want to find such a kill and maim. Their injustice remains the same. Killing the people in the Queen's name. No one will get to blame.
Survival is to be accepted and treated as a member of the human family. We practice to reveal the fundamental right and duty to be humane in all judgment and action to all humanity. So why don't you care about me?
See, I know you don't care about me. I'm just a nigga walking down your street. The brother did nothing wrong, but now his life is gone, and I know you don't care about me. Hold a silence, you say, but your action is so loud and clear. Ideology killers gone free, stay by society, and I know you don't care about me.
And I do the alloy, kill it for nothing, no crime it did not do. And just like it, there were others who suffer for what they didn't do. Living in a system
Yes, your actions speak so loud and clear. The outlaws, killers going free, paid by society. And I know you don't care about me.
Yo, did you check this out?
Gotta change how the same thing's been happening.
Over and over again. Over and over again.
When they say the Constitution is for the benefit of all,
it's all a lie, bitch. It's all a lie.
Justice, hey, hey.
Tell me when.
Tell me when will we stop feeling pain?
They might, I don't know.
They're going to step in the way? Because that's what he was saying. You know, Carl Anderson was talking about, hey, you know, 5% of black people go ahead and do this. You know, white folks going to go ahead and do that. You know, so.
Man, white folks ain't thinking about black people. They got.
Why you say that? You sure?
Yeah, what thinking about for what?
Come on, man. Well, okay, so we don't have no hurdles. You know, ain't white folks in front of us?
Hell no. I told you left. And Claude Anderson told you he left the city a long time ago.
Okay. So you agree with that thing that, hey, look, the only body holding us back is us?
Yeah, I would say so. And,
give me an example.
Government subsidies.
Ooh. And you know what? We know what you know. That thing you were saying about the you know, the, what was it? What you say about food stamps?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's starting to come back to me a little bit, man. It's like, man, you know what? That could be a go ahead and be an industry you can do something with. And I was, you know, me being a chef, man, I'd be like, man, why don't you go ahead and take your money, go ahead and create a product, cook something.
That's right. And be able to take food stamps. Or your politician should lobby in your behalf where your businesses can take food stamps. That SNAP card. People can come in, eat a meal, and swipe their card.
Mm.
Of course, the farmers wouldn't like it.
Why wouldn't the farmers like it?
Well, the farmers was one. The farm industry was one of the major proponents for supplemental food.
You know, the farmers get paid big, pay good money. They get paid really, really, really good money. And this is what I don't understand when I hear the Republicans talk about that. You know, people on welfare and all this other stuff. You know, it's like the Iowa farmers. There's a lot of Republicans in Iowa, and they can pay good money because they get money off that. You know, people go ahead and use that, the old food stamp program.
That's right. They just tell you that the more people go on food stamps, the better off it is. And I think Duncan said something about that, too. I just don't remember what it was he said. But no, that's a fact. The increased food stamps from 26 million to 47 million. That's a windfall for the agriculture industry.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So you know, blacks don't have nowhere near the farms that they need to have, and all the other elements. In conjunction with producing and processing the food stuff.
You know, Claude Anderson was talking about that, you know, the farmers, the black farmers, and not having a distribution center and marketing. And, you know, shit, that's some stuff we need to really get on, man, because I'm trying to work on that myself, brother. I'm going to get with you about that soon, because you know, so, I'm waiting for some other things to happen. But... And you told me about the guys down in Mississippi, man. I still haven't been connected with them, man. And as soon as I go and get this paperwork straight, man, then I'll be looking to talk to them because right now I'm looking for grant writers.
Well, you got a plan?
Mm-hmm. I got a real good plan, brother.
You got a plan that shows costs?
I got a real good plan, brother. I got a beautiful accountant too.
Well, that's what you got to have. You got to have a plan. You can't be going in and talking about you got a knack for it.
I got a couple of people that's working on my behalf as far as accounting concerned. There, one, you know, accounting. I hired her. She's working. She does good work for me. Plus, my mother's an accountant. You know, she got some stuff and a few other people. And they've got involved in going ahead and writing grants, man. And this group is dynamic. I'm still looking for other people to go ahead and help me with this. So, But I'm really, my thing is going ahead and getting us involved in the farming and agriculture and showing people, hey, look, you know, that fish farming thing, man.
Yeah, I got to get out there.
Carl Anderson was talking, you know, he's got a whole lot of references to Detroit. Shit, I've been up there, man, that fucking armpit of America. I'm looking at that place, man, it could be damn near fish farms on almost every goddamn block.
Yeah, Detroit. And Detroit was like that. Detroit wasn't too much better back in the 1990s when I was last. I was in Detroit in 1999, I think, 14 years ago. But, you know, man, I'm going out to visit Mr. Anderson and see what's going on. I'm going to Iowa State University. They just built a brand-new dairy farm, latest state-of-the-art, and I want to look at that. A Nigerian want to see it, too.
Another dairy farm?
Yeah. Another Nigerian friend of mine wants to go visit a water company. There's an African American that owns a bottled water company here. And another Nigerian want to go look at the Claude Anderson fish farm with me.
Well, you're going to have to go ahead and keep me posted on what's going on with that brother, man. I'm slowly bringing some people together. So, well, I don't say
he
I am.
£1 million a year, he says.
Well, I won't say I am bringing these people together. I'm working with some people, so I'm trying to go ahead and work with them so we can go do things as a group, so we can go ahead and do some other stuff. So I looked at the fish farming with Claude Anderson over there in Maryland. As soon as I get a decent-sized group together, I'm going to go ahead and send some people over there and see how we can go ahead and talk to them because I know they
know
get tours.
I'm going to tell you how to do that. And it may not be all that needs to be done, but somebody needs to go there and work for him and intern with him so you can learn what's going on.
Exactly. You know what? I was leading to that. Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, that's what I want to go ahead and do. I'm going to send my students over there, people that's trying to get my program, send them over there to learn some stuff.
How about you do that? Because I want to, that's a good thing right there. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's a good thing. Each one of those tanks is equivalent to a outdoor acre lake.
Really?
43,000 square foot lake. Each one of those tanks holds that much water.
Mm.
And the thing that's going for him is that the fish is alive. Like you said before, you buy a fish today, you don't know when that damn fish, how long it's been dead.
Yeah, that is. That's a crying shame, man. That's some sad stuff. Cause you don't know, because I was given an example about the turkey. You know, people buying these turkeys, man, and then this one lady came up with a turkey that was dated with like 7 years prior. I'm like, my damn. So all it was, they froze it. So one thing that Claude Anderson says in that YouTube video was that, hey, look, you're getting fish from Asia, and they spraying it. You know, and you know, it's already come from an environment that's questionable. But then you're spraying it. What you spraying it with? So you know, his stuff going ahead and having fresh, and you can come and see what they're putting in there to feed the fish. I mean, that's a hell of a lot better. Plus, when you go ahead, you shipping that stuff from over, you know, from Asia, bringing it here. You know, the cost is relatively low. But what happens is. Individuals go ahead and put that as another item that they trade on the market. So they go ahead and the speculators go ahead and they add their cost into it. Am I correct?
Well, I don't know about that.
Mm-mm.
I don't know about the speculator. I think the fish come from, you know, they use their own transportation.
Well, you know, you're not dealing with fish. You know, everything has, when you're talking about the futures market.
And you know another thing too. I'm only familiar with fish that's the Chinese sell here. Of course, now I understand that some Jewish groups have a lot of control over that before the Chinese came here. You know, Chinese created these retail outlets for themselves, and then of course blacks wander off into them too. You know, as a shopper, but. Before that, the Jewish concerns controlled the wholesale of fish in this area and probably elsewhere too. Those are the people we got to compete with and got to push their butt on out of the way. Chinese don't even want, some areas they don't even want to mess with you. You don't see Chinese other than Chinese food. They don't, they have some Chinese restaurants, but you don't see them, very seldom you see them going off into other cuisines. You know, I don't see them having no Mexican restaurant.
You know, that's another reason I wanted to play a thing about the Chinese restaurants. You got black people lined up to go here and get into the Chinese restaurant, but you got Chinese lined up to get into the black restaurant. Wow.
No, they don't eat that food. That's not their delicacy.
Wow, that's wild. Ain't that crazy?
You don't see Chinese running Italian restaurants. I mean,
you know what, man? I'm going to mess your head up even more, and I think you're aware of this, but... Hey, you know, it's a lot of Chinese restaurants. I see Mexicans in the back cooking the food.
Yeah. You're right. That fish market, they got some Mexicans up in there. Because when you go up east, up in the northeast, you got Mexican immigrants up there working in those fisheries.
Oh, you like Seattle? I mean, all the way to the northeast. Okay, I get it. And the northwest is like that.
Illegal immigrants.
Yeah, I mean, I got a real problem with that term, illegal immigrants. I mean, like, you know, the white folks determine who was illegal. Come on.
That's working in those industry.
That's some sad stuff, man. That's some real sad stuff. Okay, brother.
I'm getting ready to get out of here, man. Your program's off the air. Tracy,
yes,
go.
Yes. I'm going to go ahead and play this clip, brother. You know, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I always enjoy it. You know, hope you come
all
here
right,
and check.
Talk to you later on.
Okay, thanks, brother.
All right, peace.
Yo! Bless the love and greeting. Yeah. Here comes the musical thing called Bring Your Queen and Lock Your Machine. Oh, yeah.
Pull up,
here comes the musical thing called Bring Your Queen and Lock Your Machine. Oh, yeah. But a wave, but a wave, but a wave, yeah. Oh, hey. I love the vibes, I know the rhythm, my job. But men are coming at the dance, I shop. Music is all we got. Now we must defend it.
Dance up, don't need no one.
Man, I know man, no part.
Everyone is a part.
Making life on Mamma Mia.
Dance up, the people search.
Yes, it's where everyone's gathering.
Need no bothering.
That's just love. So everyone must say. Everyone that come express themselves, them dress to impress. One black love, one Africanness.
Well, I say pull up, mentality from the top.
The music on the street, but check the message at the back. In come the musical thing, I'll bring your queen, I'll lock your block. And the truth and the nuts to us, so chat.
Dance all, don't need no one.
Man and woman for part. But Mamma Mia,
Santa,
the people's church. Yes, it's where everyone's gathering.
Need no pardon, I just love.
I know the rhythm of time. And taxi gang is under your dark. Yeah.
Rory has the control power. Play them driven every hour.
And
don't need no war.
My love, my love, my.
rock on the me.
Everyone, everyone,
even me.
Everyone, everyone,
bring in your swing.
Everyone, everyone,
music to
sing. Everyone, everyone,
must come together.
Everyone, 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 everyone.
The sweetest sweet relief, that's our sweet.
That's our sweet.
But I say, blah, 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 that's a little bump, bump. The message that I got. Ain't tell me the God thing, I bring the queen a lot to talk. The truth man a talk and a sword to talk. The blacks are in the building and we rule the hill top. And when we come a dance I'll know we not to drop. I love this in the heart, I tell you joy is what we got. And I let her be a tell you that.